Chalmers for the tie.
Got it with two seconds.
They're going to kick the field goal. It'll be Jason Gingell out of the hole to Mesko. Good snap. Good hold. And the kick is blocked. Appalachian State has stunned the college football world.
Last time on Sports Out the Wazoo. Oh, wow.
Joining us right now, we're going to talk to Steve Cheek. He's a blogger and writer for SouthernPigskin.com. You can find him on the old North State blog on SouthernPigskin.com.
I think the difference in this year's Elon team and the past few Elon teams is defense. All of a sudden, they found a defense. You know, I called him in the past the Texas Tech of the Southern Conference.
If somebody comes to you in the middle of the week and says, all right, there's 4:30 left on the clock, you got 99 yards to go in the fourth quarter, you're down 3 points, you've got the ball, they would say, we'll take it.
He has not shown anything.
He was open. Once again, Jake Plum not getting him the ball.
But he stopped. He stopped on the plate.
The Villanova-Richmond game. The color guard dropped the F-bomb there at the end of the game, and I don't want to quote him, but he really wanted that game to end pretty bad.
I heard it, and it was not pretty.
I still can't figure out who it was. I don't know if it was an off-mic producer, which I feel like it was. We've been talking about unemployment numbers in the U.S. It just rose by 0.001% today.
And welcome to Sports Out the Wazoo. Brandon Dixon, Chris Kroeger, Justin Huzeppis, special guest in the studio, host of Absolutely Sports, Joseph Shook, will be on with us as well. As always, Sports Out the Wazoo is sponsored by Capone's, located off of 454 West King Street, 265-1886. Seven digits, great pizza, so close away. But you know what? As you mentioned, Chris, go ahead and tell the audience what all we are on. We are technologically savvy, I feel.
Lots of ways to get involved tonight. You know the drill, 828-264-4905. If you want to get at us on the phone lines, you can also get on us on Twitter, twitter.com/SOTW_show, facebook.com/sportsoutthewazoo. You can email us at SOTWshow@gmail.com. Brandon, a lot to get into. We had a busy weekend ourselves. We were globetrotting all over the place, covering Appalachian State men's basketball this weekend. But obviously the big show in town, once Saturday rolled around, the Southern Conference Championship game. It wasn't an official championship game, but it was a Southern Conference Championship game taking place in Elon, on the campus of Elon University. And, of course, who comes out on top? Our Appalachian State Mountaineers, now five-time consecutive Southern Conference champions.
Like Booker T says, five-time champion.
That's right. And it's hard to believe in the regards that when you step back and think to yourself, I mean, it's not hard to believe when you look at this team. We expected this team to win on Saturday.
On paper, obviously, they're the better team. They're the best team in the SoCon.
But when you look at the way in which it happened, and I think when you take a step back and say, wow, for five straight years, this team has done nothing but win conference championships, I don't care who you are, That's a feat. That's an achievement.
That's domination.
It is domination. Obviously, we haven't won five outright. There was one back in 2007 where we did share that conference championship with Wofford. And if ASU wants to win, be the outright champions this year, you win against Western Carolina, there's nothing you can do. Obviously, Elon.
Well, they already have the trophy, so it's theirs.
Yeah, but Elon can get a trophy themselves if they win on Saturday. If Elon wins on Saturday, ASU loses to Western Carolina. There's two Southern Conference champions. It'll be Elon and ASU. There is no tiebreaker. But ASU secured themselves no worse than a share of the Southern Conference title and no worse than an automatic bid to the Division I football championship. And so it's definitely set the stage. But, Brandon, we'll talk about this game a little bit. Obviously, there was a huge buildup. People were calling it the SoCon Super Bowl. It was rumored that about up to 7,000 ASU fans were at that game. The official attendance, 14,166. Joseph, you were there, so we'll talk to you in a second. But, wow, what an environment and what a stage for ASU to really lay down the smackdown on the Phoenix.
Well, yeah, and with all the smack talk coming into this game and how this was going to be the most important game, this was going to be a gridiron battle, it didn't live up to that hype, really. I mean, it was obviously
one-sided.
Yeah, it was very one-sided, though. It was not a battle, per se. It was ASU jumping all over and clobbering Elon and then just kind of holding in down the stretch. And so, I mean, ASU, again, kind of proves, like I said, like what did I say last week? I said, in the biggest games, you know, when the stage is the biggest, the lights shine the brightest on the stars,
yeah.
And ASU is full of stars.
We were both in agreement with that.
Yeah, and I said, against Wofford, they blew them out. I said, against Georgia Southern, they blew them out. all these big games, they've been able to win. And I said, I don't think this is going to be any different.
Well, I think the numbers were a bit skewed. When you looked at the numbers before the game, everybody said Elon's got the number one defense. Okay, congratulations. You also padded your stats against teams like Presbyterian, against teams like Davidson, against teams like Western Carolina. When you looked at the meat of their schedule, their two toughest games were the teams they struggle the most with. And then you look at the flip side, those same two teams are the two teams that absolutely dominated in the past 3 weeks in Furman and Georgia Southern. So that argument held absolutely no water.
Their only real test was against Wake Forest, in which they absolutely got slaughtered.
Exactly.
You look at Wake Forest now, and what are they? They're 4-7. They've not looked good all year. So you got to kind of take it with a grain of salt. You got to take that schedule, and you know, a lot of times we kind of, as media, as fans, buy into strength of schedule, or okay, if Team A beat Team B and Team B beat Team C, A is better than Team C. No, you can't do that, and that's not the case. And that's why you can't play teams on paper. You got to play them in the game, and that's where the difference lies.
And that's why there's no tiebreaker in the Southern Conference for the championship. So if Ghost decides to lose to Western Carolina, which they haven't done at home since 1984, a very long time, that's 25 years, but if they happen to stub their toe against the Catamounts at home, and Elon happens to go down to Samford and knock off the Bulldogs on the road, Elon technically would be the Southern Conference champions themselves. The thing is, people say, well, why is there no tiebreaker? There's no tiebreaker because how do you dictate which game was tougher? Because not every team plays the same teams on the either at home or on the road. There's 8 teams in the conference. Some teams play a team on home. Some teams play a team on the road. So you can't say, well, our win over Furman was worth more than yours because we played them at home, you played them on the road. You can't do that. So there's no tiebreaker there.
I think the ultimate tiebreaker, if there was one, was whoever beat the team the top team beat the second ranked team or whatever.
Yeah, well, you do that, but at the same time, you look at the other schedules.
Yeah, either way, Appalachian's going to take at least a share.
Yeah, exactly.
And they have the trophy in their possession, so nobody's going to take away their fifth SoCon championship away from them.
The thing that stands out to me, though, in this game, and I talked to you about this a little bit over the weekend as we were just kind of shooting the breeze and trying to figure out what would happen in this game. I read a lot of articles and I read a lot of quotes from Elon's players on Thursday and Friday that really, they had me taken aback. And they had me taken aback in a way that the way that they were wording some of the things that they were saying. And some of those things were, people were asking them, you know, well, how do you feel going into this game? And they were throwing around words, Brandon, like destiny. Destiny is the one that stood out to me. They were saying things like, you know what, 4 years ago we came here at this program. This program is in the dumps. 2 years ago, we felt like they actually had a chance. All they had to do was win out, and they would have a chance to win a Southern Conference championship. They folded down the stretch. Last year it was, all right, we control our own destiny. We beat App, and we get at least a share of the conference title. And this year it was, all right, both teams are undefeated, they're coming to our house, we feel destined. The thing is, in 5 years of being here or in being involved in this run of Appalachian State football, not once have I ever heard Coach Moore say, I feel we're destined to beat Michigan. I feel we're destined to win a national championship. Not once have I ever heard Armani Edwards say, you know what, I feel destined to go roll over Georgia Southern this weekend.
Well, Elon took it for granted. They acted like winning the SoCon championship was almost like a rite of passage.
Well, no,
that beating App was just was how it was going to unfold, and that there's no other way. Like, there was this big, big cloud and big dream that Elon had, and it was going to be fulfilled magically.
It
didn't happen.
My feelings are, destiny is something that you make, Brandon. If people say, oh, it's about luck. You know what? I believe in luck, but I believe in you make your own luck. And so you put yourself in a position to be lucky. You put yourself in a position to say, we were destined to do those things. And then if you look at the flip side of the quotes from the App players during the week of preparation leading up to the game on Saturday, what were they saying? We respect this team. We know this team's dangerous, but we've been in these situations before. We're battle tested. And at the end of the day, those sort of things played out.
Well, destiny, I think when you look at that word, it's a past tense term. It's, you know, okay, this team was destined, or it was their destiny to win the championship, and you say that after they won the championship because you say, okay, well, these pieces
fell. It's what you make of it, yeah.
You don't say it before you win something.
Exactly, that's my point.
You know what, I think they spoke prematurely there.
Well, we'll bring in Joseph right now. Joseph, you were at the game. Me and Brandon had to travel down to Johnson City to cover Appalachian basketball as they took on the Bucks, and we'll get into that a little bit later on in the show. But you were at the game. The attendance, 14,166. They crushed the record attendance by over 1,000 at Elon. From what most people are saying, at best, or at worst, I guess you could say, for App, the attendance was split maybe 40-60, probably closer to 50-50. Was that true in your opinion?
Yeah, it definitely wasn't 40-60. I mean, ASU, put it in perspective this way. If you've seen images of their stadium, you know they have two sides. You know, the home side, which is obviously has more stands than the visitor side, which is absolutely pathetic. It seats like 1,000 people. But they don't have a third, like the horseshoe design. Their two end zones are both grass.
Yeah.
The grass was completely covered on both sides. Now, the visitor's side was completely packed with app fans, and both grass sections was completely packed with grass or with app fans. So, 3/4 of the stadium is app fans. And in I don't know if you call it an unfortunate pleasure or fortunate pleasure, but I was on the Elon side, up to the far right next to the scoreboard, and we had about 50 ASU alumni with us, which was very entertaining and very thrilling in itself.
ASU alumni can always be
they were so great. We would cheer first down, do our first down chant every time we got a first down. I mean, every single time. But anyway, I wouldn't be surprised if it was 55-45 ASU's favor, honestly.
Well, you have to say that is an area highly populated by ASU alum. That's an area. Mm-hmm. And then if you mix in the fact of, heck, you just go down I-40 and you're in Burlington, you're in Elon, it's not a far trek for ASU. And that's always been a highly attended game by ASU fans. And you just go back 2 years ago, back in 07 when we played Elon at Elon, that was the previous set attendance record. So ASU is always the one turning out the crowds.
You look at Mecklenburg, you look at Forsyth County, you look at Guilford County.
Yeah.
Those are three of your biggest, if not the biggest, and then, you know, the Raleigh-Chapel Hill area as well. You look at those counties, and that's where all your population really comes from at Appalachian. If we're able to send 5,000-plus to ECU in a game in which tickets were kind of in high demand, they were tough to get, then in a game against Elon, a SoCon division opponent, in Burlington, like you said, kind of with that Guilford Forsyth County crowd that can go right back to home, and at the end of the season, and tickets were available at least within the last couple weeks, you got to think that we're going to have a big crowd, and we travel well. We're a team that, and that's something that we take pride in, especially the Mountaineer Maniacs, the craziest of the fans, the true loyal dedicated fans. They love to travel. They love to be able to outrepresent the opposing team at their own home. We've done it. I remember when last year we went to Western Carolina. Obviously, that's not that big of a feat, but we outnumbered them probably 2-1 at least, and we were doing App State chants left and right. We had people actually move from our section, where we were sitting in the home section, to the away section so that we could have a stronger App State chant. That's the way it is.
We did that Saturday at Elon. They did that. The two grass sections did the app part, and then the actual seated part did the state, and I was able to hear it well, obviously being on the Elon side. But when that was going on, the Elon students were stunned. They could not believe what was going on. And let me point this out too. 30 minutes before game time, the app fans were in the stadium. Everybody was there. Half the Elon side was still unfilled, and half the student section was still unfilled.
They have garnered the nickname of being Mini Meat Carolina, and the fact that Carolina fans are known for being a little bit of a wine and cheese crowd. They show up late. They leave early. Heck, I can't argue with that, and I can't point fingers, because you know what? The past couple weeks, the past couple months, ASU fans at our games have been doing much of the same thing. So you can't argue with
but
that.
We'll
say this. I wasn't at the game, Joseph, but from watching the highlights and watching what I saw on TV, it appeared to be KBS, Kid Brewer Stadium East.
Yes.
We've called Chattanooga KBS West. It appeared to be KBS East.
We now have KBS East
in Elon.
ECU as well. Well,
apart from all the hoopla and just all the general festiveness surrounding the game, the X's and O's, App had the number one offense. Elon had the number one defense in the country. App came out on top. 486 total yards of offense. Armani Edwards, 21 of 24.
He did bang up his knee.
Yeah, 21 of 24 for 284 yards. As you said, he banged up his knee.
Should be fine.
Came back in the second half, played some series. It is swollen. They're saying it's a strained ACL.
It's day-to-day.
He's listed as day-to-day, as you said. But 75 yards on the ground, 3 scores. And then picking off Scotty Riddle 3 times in the game, 3 times in the first quarter of the game. And that's those three interceptions. He only had 4 all year long, and that was just the third 3 interception game he's ever had in his career. So ASU really started everything on the defensive end. They forced the issue, and that turned right downhill on offense as Armani took advantage of the good field position and led the apps on offense as well. Setting up a matchup, 7-0 in the SoCon, taking on 1-6 Western Carolina for the battle for the Old Mountain Jug here in Boone on Saturday. Kickoff is at 3:30. Also, for the second week in a row, Pac-Man, Mark Packer, is going to have the Southern Fried Football Tour. This time he was in Elon last week, and he's stopping in Boone to watch the beatdown that's going to be taking place for the Catamounts on Saturday. So ASU can secure a sole possession championship on Saturday if they beat the Catamounts. As I said, if they happen to lose, Elon wins down in Sanford. But Elon's playing for big things. Last year, Elon lost to ASU the weekend before. They go on to play the next weekend against Liberty. What do? They laid an egg and lost. They do not make the playoffs. They're in the same situation this week, Brandon. If they go down to Sanford and lose, chances are they might not make the playoffs from a weak Southern Conference this year. So Elon's got a lot of pride.
It's going to be tough.
A lot of
large bid.
But it's the largest, it's the furthest traveling game of the year you play when you go down to Sanford. So interesting to see there. Also going on elsewhere in college football, lots happening. TCU, they end up keeping their thing, their whole BCS Buster National Championship berth hopes alive as they win big over Utah on the road, actually at home, excuse me, on Saturday, unveiling their new uniforms. And Brandon, I just want to talk about these real quick. I'm a big uniform guy. We talked about them last week on the show. Nike unveiled their new Nike Pro Combat uniforms. TCU and Virginia Tech are the only two schools to wear them. And TCU had, in my opinion, the coolest uniform I have ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, and it looks like it's from an Under Armour commercial. It at first, when they're first showing the pants, they almost look like long johns, if you can think of that. It's kind of got that black and white tint to it, and it's almost like it's got little holes in it. But it's really interesting. I enjoyed looking at these uniforms. And like you said, the helmets really make it, because, as you mentioned, it has the two like lines of blood, basically.
There are two streaks of blood starting from the tip and going all the way to the back, signifying a horned frog. That is their mascot, TCU Horned Frog. The horned frog, when it's attacking its enemy, it shoots blood. How bad is that? It shoots blood at its enemy. So they decided to put the streaks of blood on the helmet. They're using what Nike calls their embedded aero graphics. If that sounds familiar to you, Team USA in basketball just two summers ago down in Beijing, they debuted it. It's embedded into the uniform. It's graphics signifying special things. For instance, the Team USA, they had the Liberty Bell, Statue of Liberty, the American flag, all that sort of stuff.
I think the most important thing for TCU, though, is that they're able to win in them. They not only make them look good, they've got great uniforms, but then they're able to, you know, win in those uniforms and make them look a little bit better. It makes it all the more sweeter.
TCU won big. Boise State wins big. Cincinnati on Friday night really had to play a little bit of a close one against West Virginia, but they come out on top 24-21
in that
one.
They stay undefeated.
Florida had all they could handle against South Carolina, but they come out on top in that one.
It seems like they've been playing teams close. I mean, it's not the domination that we're used to seeing with Florida and really the rest of the SEC that they've been able to dominate the last 2-3 years.
Alabama took on Mississippi State down in Mississippi State, and that one was a close one for maybe a quarter or two. The score didn't indicate how well Alabama was controlling that game, and then late in the game, they turn it on. Mark Ingram, who in my opinion is the leading Heisman candidate at this point just by what he's done. His team is number one. He's put him on his back. I think Mark Ingram has a little bit of an advantage right now.
It's kind
of
it's a gridlock at the top right
now
for the Heisman.
Who else would you put with him?
You know, that's what I'm saying. I don't know that there's anybody that really stands
there's
out
nobody,
that flashy.
The reason he gets the nod right now, there's no other team that's in contention for a national title that has somebody else pushing him along. Mark Ingram is that guy.
Yeah, I mean, you got Jimmy Clausen, but what is he doing really at Notre Dame right now?
He's not winning the Heisman. There's no way he even comes close to
And really,
there's
nobody else. There's maybe a couple wide receivers that you
Colt
can go
McCoy
with.
Is the only one you could argue that has a real close opportunity.
Yeah, and his resume is not that impressive right now because he's not like I said, there's nobody flashy out there. He's not being flashy really at Texas.
Mark Ingram is taking advantage of the weaker field, and he's the lead candidate, not by much, but nobody else has stepped up to the plate. Also going on though, UNC, a great weekend of ACC football. UNC beats Miami in Chapel Hill. I just got to know, we've been talking about this all year. Is the ACC that bad, or is the ACC that trivial? Is there that much parity?
You know what? I think the ACC is that bad. That's all there is to it. Georgia Tech's obviously clearly the favorite. They're 10-1. They've been dominating the rest of the ACC. They really haven't tripped up this season. And the rest of the ACC is just kind of just, you know, a bunch of teams playing together, beating each other up, going absolutely nowhere. And it's getting uglier and uglier each year. And eventually something's got to happen to where they kind of restore that power back to the ACC as a football and basketball conference.
This is where everything starts to take shape. We're up against the break. We'll take that in just a second. But this is where everything starts to take shape, Brandon, in regards of the BCS standings are pretty much set. What needs to happen now is a couple of teams need to slip in their conference championship games for a team like TCU to get a chance. Because right now, Alabama and Florida, they're set once again for the second year in a row to go up against each other in the SEC championship game. right now it looks like Texas is going to have no competition whatsoever in the Big 12 championship game. So is it even possible for TCU to get there? In my opinion, I say no. They're going to need a miracle at this point.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. It's an uphill struggle for sure. But also the other storyline of the week, was Stanford beating USC. They absolutely beat down USC.
Who's surprised, though? That shocks you?
Why does
that shock you?
It doesn't shock me that much. That's why I said, you kind of got onto me a few weeks back when I said USC's overrated. You said, what are you talking about? They're overrated. They're number five. They're number five in the country. I said, they're not that good of a team. Matt Barkley's not that good of a quarterback. And you guys kind of, they were like, what are you talking about?
They weren't overrated for what they did at that time. You can't penalize a team for something they hadn't done yet.
Yeah, but I was saying at the time, the talent that they had, they were overrated, clearly.
It is worth noting because Kazepes is wearing his throwback Reggie Bush.
But
the glory days of Trojan football right there.
Either way, though, during the game, after the game, Pete Carroll was extremely upset at Jim Harbaugh as he apparently went for a two-point conversion after the sixth touchdown.
Are you going to complain about this again, too? Are you mad about Pete Carroll?
No. I'm actually happy because I can't stand Pete Carroll. And you know what? He would have
done. You have such a double standard. You have such a double standard.
No, it's not a double standard. It wasn't 63-0.
So you were okay with what he did, but you're not okay with what the Patriots, a professional sports franchise, did to the Tennessee Titans.
Absolutely.
You have such a double standard.
Not a double standard.
How is that not a double standard?
First of all, the Patriots won like 63-0. This game was 55-21.
They're a professional sports franchise, not a college team.
Either way, this was two ranked teams going against each other. They went for a 2-point conversion. They didn't keep passing for touchdowns. They just went for a 2-point conversion. That's all it was. The Patriots kept passing for touchdowns.
Such a double standard.
And they were down by 30.
Pete Carroll even said in the postgame news conference, he doesn't care. You got to respect. You got to do what you got to do.
But the thing is that he's a liar if he says he doesn't care, because he does care. That's all there is to it. He's a liar if he says he doesn't care, because he was pissed off after the game. He's just like Bill Belichick. He is unsportsmanlike. When he loses, he is a crybaby, and that's all Pete Carroll has ever been.
Such a freaking double standard. We got to take a break. When we get back, NFL action. What a great weekend in the NFL it was. A lot of great games, but also a lot of big injuries. We'll get into that. The Panthers, there's playoff hope abounding for them. Lots to get into.
I don't know about abounding.
We'll talk about it. More Sports Out the Wazoo's coming up next, right here, 90.5 WASU FM online, WASURocks.com.